Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 20th on the West Coast, now April the 21st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially those in the U.S. military, and Also, those listening in on blogtalkradio.com and anywhere else we should happen to appear mysteriously. These days, I'm hearing good news that our listening audience is continuing to grow, that people are gravitating toward the truth, and we are going to continue to bring you the truth the best way we know how. For those of you who may be interested, and I've been announcing off and on over the past couple of months, actually, that I have another article coming out regarding my research into the Dwight D. Eisenhower birth certificate scandal, and I have really stumbled into some fascinating information that is going to reveal the truth to us, and we have to deal with it. Nonetheless, whether it's something that tickles our fancy or really is upsetting, we've got to deal with it. And I've discovered how and who and what and even why the goings-on back in 1952 transpired the way they did, what permitted Eisenhower to become the president, even though he was not an American. He never was, never will be, and you will be convinced when you see my research in that regard. Any day now, hopefully even tomorrow, I will have this thing finally wrapped up. There's a tremendous amount of documentation that I'm going to be making available to my readers at my website, directlightproductions.com, and I'm going to be discussing a lot of this research as I did yesterday on Drew Malone Arranged the Third's A Marine's Disquisition radio show, heard on the two networks that I just mentioned a moment ago. And I'm going to be on Republic Broadcasting Network on the story behind the story with Dr. H. Ruat. That show airs on the East Coast at 2 o'clock from 2 to 4, Central Time 1 to 3, Mountain Time, noon to 2, and on the West Coast, 11 to 1. So I encourage you to tune into that show if you're interested in getting a feel for what you will be reading. It's there. Trust me, there are a lot of facts. I try to make it as comprehensible as possible. Here we're dealing with a tremendous amount of obfuscation, but it's going to reveal even why we are in the state we are in today. And I'm not talking about the state of Massachusetts. That said, I happen to hear some good news today. It seems that magician, super mega magician, David Copperfield, performed probably the greatest trick of his life. He had been charged with raping a woman, and this woman was bringing about a lawsuit. And the big trick that Mr. Copperfield performed was making that lawsuit disappear. Evidently, he claimed the charges were malicious and that this woman actually had sued another man for the same thing, and she was basically just looking for a gold mine. So congratulations to David Copperfield on his new trick, and let's hope that that one sticks. Well, that said, tonight's guest is returning to Evident Footprints. She is a marvelous researcher and really a tremendous guest on this show because she is just a fountain of information about vaccinations. She has been researching vaccinations for over 25 years and she appears regularly on a TV show on Scan TV in the Seattle, Washington area, a show called Call to Investigation. And she has penned a book called Tracking Vaccinations. Her name is Allison Jones. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don.
How are you this evening, by the way?
Oh, I'm doing great, and I'm in quite the mood because I've been, you know, researching as usual, and it's always shocking. It's a shock. Never see. I am, you know, started working on the HPV, human papillomavirus, because many of the book is in the children's virus.
Allison, I have to stop you. We're having a little bit of trouble. I think both the network and I are having a problem. So we are going to try to reconnect with you and continue this. And I understand at the moment that my trusty engineer, Don Newsom, is doing exactly that. So thank you, Don. We'll get Allison back here in a moment. While we're waiting for her to get back, and that could just be momentarily, I've been hearing again the threats of vaccinations being forced upon people around the world, and the people are speaking out about it. They're even trying to include this RFID chip that we've heard so much about in the past couple of years into the conversation. Of course, these draconian laws are nothing more than ways for the pharmaceutical industries to reap billions and billions of dollars and to make us sick, to cause us to be sick. We've revealed the intentions to undermine our societies worldwide and the population, cull the population down to anything from 2/3 to, I've heard, 90% even mentioned on occasion. And I suppose that if we buy into the fear and are not educated, it's very easy to fall prey to such a ruse. So I understand now that we have Allison back. Allison, you're with us, let me know.
Yes, hi, Don, I'm back.
Okay, you're back. And you're speaking English this time. Okay.
And the line is clear. Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. But yeah, so I did work on the HPV, which is, you know, they're saying, oh, this causes cancer, so the girls need Gardasil. And actually, this virus does not cause cancer at all. It's just opportunistic. It's the same thing that causes planter's warts. It will grow into a crack that's in the foot, or it likes the skin. And people don't realize that we have an internal skin also, that's the mucous linings, which is part of the genital tract, and that's where it gets in. And then I'm also upset because, you know, the girls are fainting after they get this. And instead of looking into why these girls are fainting, classically they're saying, oh, well, it's just they have a problem with it, you know, girls faint easily. But it turns out that each dose has 225 micrograms of aluminum in them, which is used to make the virus particle last for a long time in the body. It's the aluminum sticks and the heavy metals stay in the body for so many years, like 3 years, and in this case it's even less, and slowly releases the virus particle. So that's how they use it, and they've got 225 micrograms, but the lethal dosage level is 25 to 50 micrograms, and it's not killing them, but it's making them faint because it's too much, and then they're getting three in a row within a few months span, so they're getting almost 700 micrograms of this. It's crazy.
And how much is in the first shot, did you say?
225 micrograms in Gardasil. And that's 10 times, you know, they debate whether it's 25 to 50, but it's over 10 times what they consider safe to be in these shots. So no wonder these girls are fainting. But, you know, it's typical. The supposed experts want to just pull the wool over our eyes and bluff us with all their statistics, you know. And my job here is to find the scientific details, you know, exactly how these things are made. And then they speak for themselves. The answers are in the recipes.
Mm-hmm. And what is the reason, I don't know if you've been able to look at actual patents on this, but in terms of all of this aluminum that's being put in these vaccines, what is the purpose for it?
Oh, the purpose, the aluminum, they're using it, they use either aluminum or mercury, because it will stay in the body for so long. It's hard for the body to get rid of. You know, on its own, the body gets rid of this stuff pretty fast. But if you've got a heavy metal there, it can stick around. It's about 3 years that vaccines last. And, you know, that's the irony in this whole thing. 99% of these vaccines do not last. They only have a shelf life in your body of 3 years. It's only the diphtheria and tetanus that last 10. The only two out of all the rest are very short-lived.
Well, so, it makes you wonder when we're going to see the day when somebody walks into a bar and orders a double mercury with a Coke back. You know, we've heard all this discussion over the years about the dangers of mercury. And you're outright saying either they use either. It's either or, right? Either
yes,
they're using aluminum or they're using mercury.
Generally, mercury, with all the dead vaccines, they have to use either of the two. And with the viruses, they like to use mercury. So, you know, hepatitis B, the IPV, all these have mercury in them. And that's the one given to the babies in the beginning. And mercury is really good at destroying budding brain cells. It will completely strip it, destroy it instantly, meaning the budding dendrites coming off the brain cell. A brain cell grows 1,000 of these, and it just will stick around and keep destroying them. And unfortunately for the babies, people don't seem to realize the effect of vaccines is very different on the infants than it is on adults. And it destroys brain cells in them that are irreplaceable in the limbic system. And there, you know, we have one of the causes of autism. But there's several ways that autism is caused by all the garbage in the vaccines, but that's one of them. And I was going to mention, it was interesting because the HPV, it turns out I think we mentioned Henrietta Lacks' cells last month because it was in the news. And this was a woman who died in 1951 with the most aggressive cancer on earth. and they discovered that because it's been growing ever since. And they've used this in almost all the labs everywhere to test everything. And apparently they're so powerful, they've overrun all the other batches of all the other cell cultures they've been using. And that's why they wanted to get the genes of her family, because they were trying to separate which was which. And that's how this all came out in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, that's how her family even found out this was going on. And her cells had the HPV virus, the human papillomavirus, also. But that didn't mean it caused her cancer. It didn't make it more aggressive, but it was in it also. So these are really gross things that they're using to grow the first starters of the vaccines in, too.
Yes. When I read the research on this, they said that they had grown enough of this of her cells to totally fill up the volume of 150 Empire State Buildings.
Yeah, yeah, and it's,
that's a staggering amount.
It is, and knowing how aggressive it is really shocking too. And then the individual manufacturers, once they grow the seed cultures on this. I had been studying mainly the manufacturers, what they grew it on, which is fetal lung, human lung tissue from aborted fetuses back in the 60s. They've been growing them on the same cell line from back then also, in fetuses and then also monkey tissues. And then nowadays they're using things like hamster ovaries. And these are the cells, because the viruses have to grow inside the cells. And these are things they're growing in, which are really gross. And as they grow them, they keep having to replenish the vats of, they have these like little microcarrier beads inside these vats that they spin and the cells cover them, and so the viruses are inside of that. And they keep changing the medium a couple times, so they open up these great rolling drums and change the nutrient medium, and this thing called mycoplasma, which is an ancient tiny bacteria, gets in, and they can never get it out. And they say it's only in 6% of the commercial vaccines, but I think it's in more, because when I look at the blogs amongst the researchers, they are trying to figure out how to get rid of it. It's in every batch they make. And the problem with this mycoplasma, ancient tiny bacteria, is not only can they not get rid of it, but it also causes cancer. And it's in the vaccines then. It ends up, especially the living viral vaccine, ends up in them.
Yes, it causes many, many other diseases. In fact, Jerry Lewis, for I don't know, a half a century or more, has been running these telethons annually around Labor Day weekend, and has probably raised billions of dollars for that. And muscular dystrophy and multiple sclerosis have also been associated with mycoplasmic infections, as has certain types of arthritis, lupus, and many other neurological or what diseases that affect the neurology, we'll say. They may not be neurological in nature until they attack the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Now, I did a show a little over a week ago with Dr. B. Sirius in Los Angeles, California, and he brought up the issue of excitotoxins. And, of course, that sets up the condition to attack the nervous system, again, in the brain. And so there is a correlation between these different types of vaccinations and food additives, and it also sets up an acidic metabolism, if you will, in the human body, where people are more prone to come down with some kind of a disease, not just infections, and also mm-hmm. it sets up their system to be attacked and really overcome by parasites. So all of these things are related. As you were learning all of this and studying this, because I know I sort of put you on the spot bringing this up without, you know, us agreeing that we were going to discuss this. I didn't give you a chance to do the research. No. I assumed that you were up to speed on it. Certainly you sound like you are right now.
Well, when you talk about something like multiple sclerosis, mm-hmm. yeah, basically, you know, when you start studying the viruses and how they behave with cells and whatnot, viruses need to affect a cell to multiply, to live. And normally, these viruses do not get inside our body, and even the bacteria, too. You can drink tetanus, and it doesn't do anything to you. Farmers are always ingesting it accidentally. It's when it's injected into the body or when you really cut yourself and get it into your bloodstream, that's where it makes the difference. So by injecting these things into the body, we're injecting living viruses that target the spine, they get in there, herpes will do it, and the measles, mumps, and rubellas will. And especially those, because they've been grown in labs for decades, since 1967 when they first came out with that. They've been growing them ever since. To be more invasive than their natural counterpart. So they're much more infectious than they would be naturally. So they're very dangerous, and
now,
a certain percentage do get into the body.
Well, Allison, while you were discovering this, did you have any kind of gut feeling about what was going on, just from the perspective of someone that's looking at this, maybe wondering why they're doing this?
Why they're making them this way? I know, I understand why they make them this way, because they want it to work and they don't care about the side effects. So I do understand why they use aluminum mercury. I mean, they were thrilled when they came along mercury back in, you know, decades ago and whatnot. And they do not consider the consequences whatsoever. They're just out there doing the American thing, making their product work and, you know, the side effects. And the side effects listed by the manufacturers, the adverse events, are astounding on some of these vaccines. I mean, we're wondering what's causing all these neurological problems, and the manufacturers listing them as side effects for a lot of these things. Because we're playing with fire, for sure. We're playing God, no doubt. And especially where we've gone to these days with the genetic engineering we're doing, we're definitely playing God.
Just to watch a commercial on television and listen to the side effects, it takes up 2/3 to 3/4 of the commercial just to list the side effects. But then they end it with, but you'll be doing better. You'll be sleeping well, or your libido will be
back. That's the hypnotism.
They're
trying to hypnotize you with this lulling kind of like.
Yeah, it's neuro-linguistic programming is what it is.
Yeah. and then I don't understand why parents are so trusting, actually, of the supposed experts, which are basically drug pushers. I don't understand why they don't look into what's actually in this stuff or try it on themselves first. I mean, they're so blindly trusting when they really shouldn't be, you know.
Well,
yes, it's shocking, and it never ends. And I'm disgusted and horrified by all kinds of things I could tell you about right now.
Yes. Well, we'll try to give you a chance to name some of those as we go on. I subscribe to Dr. Joe Mercola's newsletter. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. He puts out a lot of warnings about dangerous food additives, drugs, and basically he's become more of a whistleblower in a sense. Of course, he sells his own products, and I don't buy them. I haven't tried them, but generally he seems to put out pretty good information. And he just released today an article that was based upon a CNN report where Pfizer was charged basically with let's say murder charges on Bextra, which is a very, very dangerous drug. It's a painkiller, but evidently there have been multiple cases of death. And so to hide this fine, this basically would have put Pfizer out of business. And they worked out a deal where instead of being excluded from Medicare and Medicaid, they created a subsidiary called Pharmacia and Upjohn Company Incorporated, which took the hit for that. Okay, so it went on existing as a company. These are some of the tricks that are played through the FDA to circumvent prosecution or even total, dismantling of the corporate structure as it stands.
Oh, they're excellent. They're as good as the priests are about hiding pedophiles. They're great. And
yes.
They'll just keep doing it. They've been doing it forever.
Yes.
You know? They managed to tell, to keep them from washing hands for 70 years even. It's a powerful institution. It's slightly crazy.
Yes. My research shows how many of these pharmaceutical companies invested in banks as far back as 100 years ago. They began doing this, and it certainly ties into what's going on today, not just in America, in Hawaii, and then overseas. They extended their reach, their tentacles, if you want to use that term. I think it's appropriate at this point, to the Far East especially. And it connects to everything that's going on today. It's amazing how they have bought off the Food and Drug Administration. They pay the salaries of at least 50% of the employees, if not all of them now, based on horrific amounts of profit that they're making. Obscene may be a better word. They're driven by money. I don't hear the word healing here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not hearing that word healing, that you get this shot and you're healed, or you take this medicine and you're healed. It's consistently an issue of side effects, recurring disease, and even death. What are your thoughts on that?
For instance, the HPV. When you actually look at this vaccine that they're forcing, it's on the schedule for all these teenage girls. It's done in 2 or 3 years. It doesn't even last, and yet you've injected these kids with so much toxic aluminum stuff. It doesn't make sense. Why even do it if it doesn't last? You know, I mean, when it's supposed to kick in and really be, I mean, it doesn't even make sense, their logic for even doing it to begin with.
Money.
And if you look around the world, you can see that, you know, we traditionally had 90% of the world's neurologically damaged children. And then we started spreading it, as you said, the tentacles off to, you know, some other countries. But still, no one vaccinates their children as aggressively as Americans do. most countries wait. I mean, a lot of them, especially in the third world countries, they'll wait, you know, up to 2 years while they're nursing. They're babies. You just keep them near them, and they're not neurologically damaged like our kids are. And I heard your show last night, and you played the clip from, you know, them on the street asking people questions.
About history? Oh, yes. Wasn't that brilliant?
And nobody could answer anything. That was hysterical. And it's, like, amazing that Americans be so dumb to not even know what countries border their country or, you know, whatever, where, you know, you go over to Europe and people know the capitals from around the world or whatever, and they speak five languages. I mean, it's just astounding. And then if you look at our vaccination policy, and, I mean, I'm just saying, from a mom who's got two girls who are unvaccinated and they're, like, getting scholarships and on honor rolls and, you know, leaving everybody in the dust, I see other American kids just, you know, they're dumbing down the schools just to, so they can keep pace. And then when they go to these good schools, you've got kids from around the world who are able to come to America and, you know, join the cyber force. These guys are from India are running our cyber companies over here now and, you know, working in the medical field. And, you know, we're importing our skilled workers.
Oh, yes. And you know, well, it's maybe a bit off topic slightly, but you mentioned India, and India basically is leading the world in sounding the alarm about the Monsanto corn that they've been growing there. These farmers have been committing suicide. They have been forced into so much debt to comply with these draconian laws that have been passed. And, you know, they're promised that that these crops that they're growing are going to be able to withstand parasitic attack by insects or blight, and what's happening is the regular non-GM crops are being crowded out. They're being forced out of existence, basically, and there is no nutritional value to this food whatsoever, despite what they claim. Okay, not to mention that. If these are genetically modified foods that are bug resistant, there's got to be some element of bug killer in that DNA that they're consuming.
I mean, yeah, and it's interesting you got to that point. That definitely ties into what they're able to do today. They are able to inject either viruses or bacteria into plants and have them change the DNA of the plant. And they can do it with either of those. And they've gotten so good at it that I knew that this could get to something really bad, what they could do with this, because mankind can't help themselves. You know, you give them a chance to do something, and they'll just take it to the worst degree. Kind of like, you know, poor Einstein comes up with EMC squared. Next thing they do is they go run off and make a bomb out of it. I mean, they wasted no time in turning it into a disaster. And the same thing with this. I was looking around at anthrax, and the vaccine that they're using for anthrax is a living spore vaccine. And I was floored, absolutely floored, because not only is it alive, but the fact that it's a spore, that means that they are able then to, because see, the problem with transporting, if you're not going to, like, be injecting something into the host, a virus and bacteria are not going to survive the air. But a spore, as we know, can float through outer space and land on another planet. You know, that's where they have the panspermia theory, where, you know, life is started by these spores. They can survive temperature, freezing cold, you name it. And they would be able now, with all that they have learned between creating anthrax spore vaccines and everything they've learned with GMO crops, they would be able to create a spore that would be a virus that would carry the genes of a bacteria, carry the genes of the plant, carry all the genes specifically that they want. You got to realize that mankind, we're good at editing sequences of DNA now. We can get in there and literally cut and splice and put snippets in there, especially of ones that we know. And the point I'm getting to is these chemtrails with the Morgellons. Mm-hmm. I was looking at what was in this stuff and really not being able to place how either virus or bacteria could survive floating through the sky. So I'm looking at the chemicals going, well, yeah, you know, I don't really get this. But now if I see it, knowing that they can make spore vaccines, now it makes sense. Because I ran across the sales slip to one of these, you know, companies that fly the stuff over and drop it. I actually saw the sales slip and saw what the ingredients were. And they were aluminum, barium, iron, calcium, magnesium, potassium, and one other electrolyte. And I'm looking at them going, okay, well, they use aluminum already to bond to bacteria to make it last in the body, and it's a delivery method. And mm-hmm. So the spores, they could have these tiny spores could be attached to this stuff that would be so small, they could be viral spores that we couldn't see. Because what I want to point out is, this is really important, because I know they've looked at this stuff and they haven't seen the pathogen. You know, they're going, well, gosh, they got the barium in there, that would destroy the immune system. It just happens that anthrax needs iron to grow. They got iron in there, and then they have these other electrolytes that are like nutrients. And then they have the aluminum for the delivery system.
And they would desiccated be able to blood and polymers and nanoparticles. And what you're talking about are really nano-sized particles.
And I was going to say, unless we know what we're looking for, underneath a microscope, scientists will not find it unless they know the markers of what they're looking for, which is why so often in the past they would look at blood and they missed AIDS, they missed HIV. That's why they missed hep C in all the blood that's donated from donors. For a long time they called it non-A, non-B. They didn't know what it was. And if you don't know what it is, you can't find it. So there's going to be stuff in here. I don't know what it is either, but there is a pathogen in here that they have designed that's small enough and difficult enough to figure out what it is, but it's in there, and it's attached to that aluminum, I'll bet you.
Well,
that's probably what the Morgellons is.
It probably wouldn't be much of a stretch, Allison, for us to say that these could even be from reptilian and gray droppings, okay? That's how...
Well, the chemtrails are definitely, you know, our planes, the military fly these things around, and they're spraying all this stuff, and apparently the Morgellons are in these cities where a lot of people, you know, which is where a lot of these chemtrails are being woven over these cities. And, I mean, that is definitely a guess here, but the Morgellons thing is really strange. And this is a possibility. This is something could definitely do. They could have these things raining down in little spores that could just, you know, land on people, because it seems to land on, you know, people's skin where that's exposed, top of their heads or arms or hands or legs or whatever, and then start growing and mm-hmm. behave very much like a plant.
Well, you touched upon something that's kind of interesting. We don't have to dwell on it, but I do want to come back to it for a moment. You spoke of space and the fact that these spores could come from another planet even. And mm-hmm. and we know that with interstellar travel going on, whether it's admitted to or not, we only in considering those that came here from another place.
Consider
that they brought something with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a stretch, is it?
It's not a stretch, but at the same time, we don't seem to realize that we do have the capability of doing this. It's really not a stretch at all.
I don't doubt that whatsoever. In fact, had it not been for those beings arriving here in the first place, we wouldn't have some of the craft that we have either flying through the skies. So, you know, I mean, it's been a progression over the years, but what the average person is aware of and what's really going on are two different things. And you're sort of bringing us into that dimension in terms of alchemy, because this is really all related to the ancient alchemists and magicians. And these are Talmudic practices here. These are Kabbalistic practices, are they not?
Well, I don't know about that, but GMOs alter plants, and in the same way they can alter humans. They just, the delivery system is different. They can't inject humans with this stuff necessarily, so they're going to perhaps deliver it that way. I mean, it's a possibility. Because these Morgellon things are really bugging me out. They're really bizarre, and they're obviously, the plant is taking the things from the human, including the plastic, because we have plastic in us. People don't seem to realize that all the molecules of plastic that are breaking down in the ocean, from all that garbage, you know, those huge flotsam garbage piles in the middle of the ocean. The fish are taking those up. We eat the fish. We get those molecules in us. And molecules are tiny. They literally become part of our body. So it's very plausible that not only are these things building their, you know, body out of hair and nails and blood and proteins, but they're also, you know, got plastic in them, polyethylene, which is the most common plastic on the planet. So it's not a stretch that we would have it in our bodies, too, for them to use to build their little bodies, little plant bodies.
Yeah. I remember, and I'm sure you do, too, Allison, the push for people to move away from butter and start using margarine. And it was discovered that margarine basically is one molecule away from plastic. So it keeps raising these questions in my mind, and I'm sure our listeners are wondering, why would anyone do that? It becomes quite apparent that these people are insane.
Yes, and I beg to ask why parents would take their kids in for 36 shots in the first couple of years of their life. 36 shots that they wouldn't dare have in their own body that are just so incredibly dangerous in so many ways. They've got to, you know, really look into why, like, for instance, the dead bacteria. How do these things work? These things that just miraculously work and are safe. As a matter of fact, anything left over that's died, they're considered biohazards. You know, you've got these doses, these vials. Like, for instance, they do have anthrax sitting around. They do have, you know, vials of this stuff, you know, how many million doses. And every 2 years, 4 years maybe it is, they have to be thrown away. And they're considered, they're treated like bio, you know, like radioactive things. And this is the stuff they're injecting into people or however they're administering the vaccines. Vaccines are treated like they're, you know, totally radioactive because they are that dangerous. All three kinds. You know, the mercury is only in one kind, the aluminum is in another, and then you have the poisons they put in them also. Not only to make them long, but to last a long time, but to make them work. And then, of course, the living viruses, which is what we started talking about here with the HPV and all this stuff and the HeLa cells. This stuff is incredibly dangerous because they're still alive. So they're not using anything to supposedly kill them. And then there's all these techniques that, you know, they use in making the vaccines that they use as excuses to say it's safe. Like, for instance, they'll say, oh, we attenuate the living viruses so they're safe. But that only attenuates a few of them. They're not all safe. And then same thing with the, yeah, there's just no way to make these all safe.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and if we gave them the benefit of the doubt and mm-hmm. Agreed that an attenuated vaccine was safe, mm-hmm. How does the body interpret that? Oh,
right.
You're going
mm-hmm.
to inject me with something that you say is safe, but then mm-hmm. the body mm-hmm. does its normal thing and mm-hmm. and reacts accordingly.
Yeah, and, like for instance, they use formaldehyde to supposedly turn the diphtheria toxin into the toxoid, which they use in all the bacterial vaccines. And this is how they say it makes it safe. But if you really look at it, only some of them are changed by the formaldehyde. And the formaldehyde forms these cross linking proteins, these strands that connect them, but once you apply heat, they dissolve and release them anyways. So then you look at it, and the whole point is not to change the toxin and make it safer. It's just so it's released over time. Vaccines are really time release, releasing deadly stuff, you know, and seeing if your body can tolerate it or not. It's really preening through the population who can live with these toxins we're giving them and who can put up and host these living viruses and not have it kill them, and then they'll be carriers of these things. There's so many aspects to what can go wrong, and they're not paying attention to any of them. They're just like tra-la-lolling like these are vitamins and you know, forcing them on people.
Yes, well, and at the same time, taking vitamins off the market, you know, depriving people of what they actually need. It's quite clear that this is an orchestrated attempt to destroy mankind. Really, these people have gone over the edge and back again. and are just spinning around like tops that are perpetual motion machines.
I guess it's the attitude that, you know, it's okay if there's some casualties, like they're little soldiers or something. That must be the reason why they continue to do this so blindly. Because, yeah, it's gotten so out of hand. They're giving you vaccines for things that you need in your body. Because a lot of bacteria will alert the immune system to come and you know, that they've got an invader there. And they're destroying some of that good bacteria, like Hib. That there's a vaccine for Hib that you need in your body. And these things, why? It doesn't make sense to give these kids most of these vaccines that, mm-hmm. that they've got out there on the market. Not at all.
Well, and, I've said on past shows, in fact, I think I said it with you, that if we were intended to get vaccines, we would have been created with a hypodermic needle in our rear end.
Yeah. Yeah, we're, you know, it's the great irony of, you know, here a parent wants to avoid their child, you know, coming across these germs, and then they go ahead and inject them with them as many times as they can. Now, if they're dead, those would be one of the safer ones. A dead viral vaccine technically would have been one of the safer ones, but they throw so much mercury in that it destroys too many brain cells. It's just hard for parents to tell their child is having brain cell destruction because the child has so many more brain cells than they do that it's only once, and also too, their brain is still forming the foundation cells in the limbic system, which is the crux of the problem in the autistic kids. People don't realize that it's only the higher human brain, human part of the brain that continues to grow brain cells and store, brain cells are grown to store memories and they continue to do that throughout life. But the limbic system, which is just beneath that, kind of in the center of the brain, does not. And that's the foundation. And that's what's still forming when kids are born. They're born way too early and they're way too vulnerable to all these things that, you know, there's different ways to destroy brain cells. They can see the same end in three different ways, and they do. And it's astounding. They will, you know, they make it so that it would take your kid away if you don't go in and do these vaccines. And even if the kids are injured, they make them come in again. And it's obvious that it's hurting them. And to see the powerlessness in parents. And it's odd, too, because I'll go out and I'll set up a table once in a while on the street and try to spread out my information. And the only people who really come up and are interested are the ones who've seen the damage. They've seen a kid that's been injured or they've heard about it. And then they're curious. But I see a lot of parents whose kids have made it through the gauntlet or can't tell there's something wrong or, oh, so what, they've got allergies. They just walk by with their kids. They're pregnant. They got their babies. And it's like they don't want to know what they did to their kids. So it makes me very sad because I'm not really able to reach the people that I would like to reach, you know, who say, oh, they are, I know enough already, or the experts have told me, so I don't really need to know these details. And I'm sitting there going, oh, yes, you do, because they don't have a clue of what's really going on. And I know it's kind of complicated, but I feel like I can break it down simply enough. And I'm, you know, going to try to find a place here in Seattle where I can give lectures with my little board and really start to educate some people who can then go on and educate other people, because educating people about the facts, about how the body really works and how viruses and bacteria work and how these things are made will really empower people. I mean, they'll be equipped with real knowledge instead of just throwing out statistics, which is all they use. Oh, well, this X amount had this and that amount had that, so it means this. That doesn't mean anything. Statistics mean nothing. What's important is the actual science behind the whole thing. And the world becomes stranger even yet than we can imagine when we start looking into it.
Yes, well, you know, I agree with you. The statistics mean absolutely nothing. If one person dies from this, throw the statistics out the window, because we really can't afford to allow products like that to be given to people. If we're to look at the truth of what's really going on here, this is criminal. And if one person dies from this, those responsible should be charged. Now, you mentioned, Allison, having seen a bill of sale. and mm-hmm. where you could tell the ingredients. What were you specifically referring to?
A bill of sale from Legend Technical Services in Phoenix, Arizona.
And they do what?
And it was the bill of sale, and it said, and they had sold to, it was a bill of sale, yeah, from Legend Technical Services in Arizona, and it said air grabs through the HEP filter, and it listed aluminum, 12,800,000, whatever units of whatever it is, and it, you know, I just have my notes here in front of me. I don't have the actual thing. I'm not sure exactly where I found it either. Something on it was actually like a scanned in bill of sale about this that listed these various things and the amounts that were in them.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this through someone else's research or was
this?
No, this
is something I just found on my own.
I mean, as far as someone detailing all of these things. How did this bill of sale just appear somewhere where you were able to find it?
Oh, yes, very good. Something on some chemtrail website had it up.
Okay, so someone else is aware of this. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it might have been Cliff Carnicom. But, we'll find out. I'll look into that. Trust me, I can probably find it if it's out there.
Yeah, I
would be interested. So basically, this is the bill of sale for what makes up the...
For the barrels of the chemicals that were going on the plane that were then going to be poured out of the plane through what they call a HEP filter, which is the filter that picks up, you know, little tiny particles are not allowed.
Yeah, creates little droplets, the micro
or
droplets.
Or vice versa, the large particles. Yeah, or blocks.
And in the dead of summer, in desert conditions, at 20,000 or 30,000 feet, they're calling these contrails still, making X's in the sky. Now I recall seeing contrails when I was a young boy, and you would see them up, you know, as high as 100,000 feet, and they would disappear within seconds. That was condensation. Coming out of the exhaust of these planes and hitting the cold air. That's what caused that. This is totally different. And there's a lot going on, I'll tell you, up in the upper atmosphere. That is one reason why they're spraying. But you mentioned also plants that they have determined now basically how to alter the genes or the genetic structure of plants. Do you suspect that some of this is what's going on with the chemtrail spraying?
I do. I think they've been studying anthrax for so long, and it's very interesting that the one ingredient they have in the greatest quantity is actually iron, which is what anthrax needs to grow. Now, I'm not saying this is anthrax, but they would be, again, splicing genes and you know, playing God here and going, oh, a little bit is from this anthrax. Those genes, since they know the genetic sequences of everything they're playing with here, they can take exactly what they want, combine all these different organisms. We're talking about three different organisms here, the viruses, bacteria, and then the plants, and they can combine them, create whatever they want. And this thing has got roots, it's got little bulbs, they're creating bodies out of the materials around them, which is the human body they're landing on. It's so plausible. It's GMO crop on our bodies, in a sense. You know, they're able to take it that step further from the plant to humans. And there's no reason why not. Because, you know, life forms border each other so closely. Bacteria become higher or lower forms that start looking like fungi, and then the fungi become more complex and start branching into more complicated life forms, and they're able to play with all of those and create whatever they want. And people are finding these things growing these, I mean, they just keep growing and growing and growing some of these, just like a plant, just like a vine.
Yeah, now, for several years, for at least the past 5 or 6 years, I've been paying very close attention to the amount of spraying that's going on in agricultural areas, in over the forest lands, the woodlands, where there are a variety of animal species. And I've noticed a very sharp reduction in the deer population, for example. we hear of these occasional mercy killings that go on where they allow the hunters to bag higher quotas of these animals to sort of cull out the herds, but they have no defense against chemtrails, especially if they're eating the very vegetation that they themselves are being sprayed with as well. And I mean to say, the animals and the vegetation are being sprayed, so they're getting a double dose of it. Mm-hmm. And certainly, they can send teams in to go look at what damage they've done in some of these areas, and gather up samples and study them, and go back and make something even more sinister than the first round. It's just insane what we're witnessing right now. And you know, this information that you're running into is you're getting a handle on it, and it's certainly going to intersect the other things that you've been researching. Now, in terms of the things that are upsetting you now, I know certainly that what you've found out about this papillomavirus vaccination is upsetting you, and rightfully so, and you're not even faced with having to make that decision. What do you tell people, our listeners, who are in a position where they're being forced or they're about to be forced to have their kids get these vaccinations? Young girls, let's say, the human papillomavirus
vaccine. Well, that one they don't need. It's not going to make any difference. I mean, they're just... The problem is cancers are being... There's so many carcinogenic things out there causing cancer. And cancer is caused by several things, but the two main reasons is that the cell has decided it's going to leave an organ and survive, and it reverts back to being primitive. And they love to travel to the reproductive organs. So that's why there's, like, cancer... It will occur down there for both men and women. But then the virus, which lives on the skin, it's just opportunistic. It's like creating a wart on a foot, plantar wart, but inside you. It's really no different than that. And as you know, if you have a plantar wart, it's not spreading. It doesn't really behave like a cancer. It's just, you know, taking advantage of the fact these cells are, you know, it's just creating a little colony there because the cells are damaged. There's a problem with the cells. In some mm-hmm. way. That's the only reason. So for that, they definitely don't need it. And in each one should be looked at and should be studied and really considered if they're needed, what's in them, if these are important or not. And I recommend that parents, if anything, if they're considering vaccination, that they at least wait 2 years before they give their baby vaccine so that the brain can make all its connections and the foundation could be formed. So if there is a problem, the child has a better chance of not having neurological damage, which...
Yeah, it's bad enough they have to take the kids into the educational system at age 5 and maybe suffer a parallel form of the same type of treatment.
Well, you know, it's good that they get to... No, it's good that they get to, you know, go to school and make friends and learn stuff, but I don't really feel for the boys because they're really not designed to be sitting all day. Boys are designed to be athletic and moving around, and it's really kind of a crime that they drug up the kids to make them sit. And it's kind of odd that, you know, we've become a society where it's pharmaceutical-based, just about everything we're doing. It affects absolutely everybody.
Well, that certainly is a major problem, isn't it? It's not it's not recent either. I mean, this is the past 100 years in this society.
In this genetically modified food, I mean, even though I was saying that we're able to combine genes, we've gone further than that in that we can change the genes of these viruses and bacteria to then go into a plant and change its genes just on its own. So we can really do anything like this. We can totally create something and then... continue on to do something as horrible as, Morgellons here. And by injecting these, you know, dangerous living viruses into these children and they're not looking at the effects of what they're doing. They're not looking at the side effects at all. They're completely ignoring them. And they're it's a waste of guinea pigs, really. They should be, if they're going to do this research on all our children, they should at least be looking at the results of what they're doing.
Yes.
Trying to think of a way to make them safer. I mean, a few could possibly be made safe, but most of them just are made, they're very sloppy, they're lazy, they don't measure things correctly, they don't care to measure stuff, they put average amounts of antitoxins in for toxins, they do a zillion things wrong, just even looking at how they make them. So there's no wonder we're having so many problems.
Well, it begs the question, is there anything that the human body was not designed to deal with in life that that wouldn't require vaccination in, you know, to begin with? Is this the result of all of these Frankenstein-like creatures that they've invented in laboratories?
Well, it's almost like, you know, they're fiddling around in the lab just to discover things, which is really wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that. But if, the minute they find something, they decide they're going to use it, whether it's really necessary or not. It's like, oh, we've come up with a vaccine for this, you know, and some small percentage might get it. We'll use it, you know, whether it's really necessary or not. And that's part of the picture. Are these necessary?
Well, when I consider the adjuvants and these organisms that they're putting in the vaccines, certainly that is an issue.
Yeah, we've got the mycoplasma sneaking in.
If you've seen some of the organisms, the blow-ups of these organisms that are found in Morgellons after someone's been exposed to chemtrails, they look like devils. These things resemble, you know, nano-sized devils. That's how specific they have gotten with this. You want to talk about satanic alchemy? That's what this is. What I'm getting to, Allison, is someone is developing these creatures, saying, "Hey, let's see what happens when we put this in the human brain. How can we get it into the brain? Well, let's make this pill, or let's make this vaccine." And let's give it to people.
Well, once the spore lands on you, it can just grow throughout your body. I mean, bacteria can do that already anyways.
But the body initially, with the diseases that were on this planet, was quite capable of fending for itself. Before we had all of these food additives, you see. They have engineered the circumstances. Let's say, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's like you go out into the jungle, the ecology. That's the word I want to use. It's like they're engineering the inner body's ecology and physiology to receive these things and react to them in negative ways. This is satanic. This is evil. There's no reason for doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely messing with the body. It causes they're messing with the immune system so much, they're causing autoimmune disorders. And then they're being silly, too. The immune system is immature under 2 years. These things don't even work under 2 years. None of them are permanent, especially under 18 months.
I get that.
And then so it's really a waste of time altogether to be even doing that. And, you know, if they really want to protect the kids from their, you know, there's very few things we really need to protect the kids from, especially in this day and age where, you know, granted, we have had some vaccines that have helped us do things such as measles. Measles was a problem. But one shot of one living viral vaccine should last for life if it's given at the right time for this living virus. And at the same time, even though it did work in helping reduce it, it's a side effect is that the living virus can then get in the spine and cause a lot of multiple sclerosis. So there are side effects to all these things. So the few that actually did us good, say polio, measles, those are the two real ones that, you know, we needed. But all the rest we don't need. And there's, you know, 10 other on the schedule that are completely unnecessary. They're giving them HIV, they're giving them the pertussis, they're giving them rotavirus for the stomach now, and the Hep B. We don't need the dead polio virus. That was taken off the market in the first 2 years. It was the oral one that got rid of polio. I don't know why they're bringing back the dead one now. It's very dangerous. They've got a meningococcal one. They've got a Hep A one. They've got chickenpox now. It's just too much. This is really mm-hmm. unnecessary and too much. And we're, you know, and people our age only had a couple. And we were fine. Nobody had neurological damage when we were kids. We did not have problems like they have now. Apparently the test that they took, you know, to get into college in the old days was much harder than they have to take today. Everything's gotten more simplified.
Mm-hmm. You know, the language of measles traces back to the Middle Ages and is associated with the Middle English word for leprosy. It wouldn't surprise me that even measles was created somehow through some unnatural means intending to create a disease just to give them an opportunity to perform their alchemic practices.
No, I don't necessarily think that back then, but if one looks at how viruses behave, I mean, basically the virus chooses the human it wants to survive in. For instance, the monkeys that we got AIDS from, when they took the kidneys from those monkeys in Africa to make the polio virus back in 1957, those monkeys all had AIDS in them. They were the only survivors of their own epidemic 100,000 years ago. So, just like, you know, HIV kills almost all the human beings it inhabits, except for a minor percentage that seem to be able to live with it, in the natural world, they would be the only survivors. And what the virus is doing is it's trying to select the carriers that can carry it forward into so it can continue to reproduce. Mm-hmm. And those humans that can't carry it, oh, well, they'll die. They don't care. They want the genes only of those who can tolerate it. And we're manipulating the genes of our progeny by giving them these toxic vaccines over and over again. We're changing their genetic makeup.
Well, of course, I don't deny that.
Germs and diseases, both the toxins. As everybody knows, if you slowly take poison over time, you'll become immune to that poison. Well, that same thing is definitely happening in the bacterial vaccines. We're injecting kids with poison every time we give them a bacterial vaccine. And the same thing with viruses, apparently. Our genes also will code a virus, which is why when we brought measles over, measles is not that scary. It was kind of like so common, it was like chicken pox. But to people like the Indians who had never come across it, they were devastated by it.
Well, listen to this definition. A disease of pigs and other animals caused by the encysted larvae of human tapeworm, of the human tapeworm. Now, I don't know how that jumped species like that, but unless it was done intentionally. On a past recent show, scientist Jim Murray was even saying that these diseases don't jump species. And certainly the DNA from one species to another doesn't jump in nature, is what I'm saying. It can be caused to happen, but not naturally.
Right. You have to put it in a blender and go inject it in someone like they did these monkey kidneys. In the jungles of Africa, they blended them up, injected them into humans, and lo and behold, suddenly we, you know, little species vector transition there.
and Jim made the comment that, for instance, a monkey DNA is not going to transform itself into human DNA just because humans and monkeys have some sort of contact. And I said there is one example where you can cause an animal species to jump into the human species. And I said that you could take a politician, put him in Washington, and turn him into a jackass. So there is at least one way to do that.
Oh, that's good. A little comic relief there. There you go, Don.
Well, Allison, we're about out of time. I do want to get into this more. I can sense your passion about this and certainly your anger. I'm trying to evoke a response that looks at the deeper spiritual issue going on here, which certainly we all have to live with for as long as we maintain a ticket to eternity, those of us that may move on into eternity. How are we going to look at this time 100 years from now or when we move on into what we know as an afterlife, into a different dimension, into a different spirituality? how are we going to look at how we handle these issues now? What is your thought on that? If you
Oh my gosh. Oh, we're going to look back, just like we look back on the past, and we're shocked that people were so ignorant. Just like, you know, they didn't wash hands. Doctors did not wash hands. We look at the fact that they didn't wash hands. What? You got to be kidding. And that's the way they were. And when Sir Oliver Wendell Holmes discovered that hands should be washed back in the 1830s, they argued against him for 70 years. Against him. They said he was a fool. And this were the experts. This is the medical institution. They killed a lot of people with all this iatrogenic things they're causing this way. And so we'll be doing the same thing. We'll look back and we'll be stunned that we were injecting mercury, aluminum, diphtheria toxin, tetanus toxin, and super strains that we bred in labs. We're injecting all three, dead viruses, dead bacteria, living viruses, all got bad things in them. And we'll be stunned that we were so careless and that we didn't care.
There's no doubt that you have a spiritual passion for your work. I think what I'm trying to evoke from you is how are we going to really look at our responsibility to accept the reality of this and put a stop to it. Whether we succeed or not is going to be the issue we're going to be looking at.
Well, I don't think people are going to do that until they start educating themselves. I don't think the passion is going to grip them until they really understand it. It's not until you really sit down and kind of get into the microscopic world where you can kind of see it in your mind, where you can see that little virus moving up and attaching itself to the bacteria, injecting its DNA, and then rearranging the DNA. You've got to be able to see the stuff and then really get it. And then nobody can tell you anything different. They can't say, oh, it's safe, don't worry. You can say, oh, no, it's not. There's no way it can be. Because it can only be made by using such and such a nasty thing. And then they can't stop you then. And parents will get angry. They'll stand up and fight about it. And they have to. People are asleep. They're not doing anything. You know, it's only those parents that have heard of something bad happening that have kept their kids clear. You can see their kids are okay. And there are parents out there who are smart, but there's not enough of them. They're in the minority. And I just don't know why. I don't know how. You know, you don't need ultrasounds every month. You don't need all this stuff. Just nurse your kid and they're going to be fine. Just
if I was to contemplate and imagine whether or not the people that are working with these deadly toxins and these vaccines and all this wash their hands, I would have to say it really wouldn't make any difference if they did or not.
Well, you know, they can't say anything anyways. My brother was working, you know, for General Foods at one point, and he was testing this chemical they were using to congeal their puddings in their food. And he went to the guys at the head of the department and said, hey, you know what? This stuff isn't any good. It congeals the blood of my rats, my lab animals. It's congealing their blood and they're dying. And they told him to just bury the research. This is a true story. This is my brother, Dr. Ron Jones. And they told him to bury his research. So if that was told to my brother, who was a toxicologist at General Foods, I can just imagine what they tell other researchers today when they discover similar things. Well, this is not a healthy thing. I don't think we should use it. And they'll want to use it anyways because it works so well.
Yes, and I don't think it's an accident that they're using hamsters driving automobiles in a certain brand of automobile commercial these days.
Okay.
It's not an accident that these images are put before us, are they?
I don't know about that, but it is very weird that they're definitely growing cells for, they're growing viruses for vaccines inside hamsters these days. That's true. They really are. They're growing them inside hamster ovaries. We're closer to them now than ever before.
Yeah. Well, Allison, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to encourage those that haven't gotten your booklet, Tracking Vaccinations, to go to your website, trackingvaccinations.com, and order one or more copies. It's not very expensive and certainly something worth sharing with loved ones and friends that you have. Any new works that are coming forward in the near future by any chance?
Oh, on this issue of the research for the vaccines, yes, I am busy researching away. There's always, it's a giant crossword puzzle. That's what it always reminds me of. And it just keeps expanding. There's so much to learn. You know, I there's so many questions that come up, and I would love to have, you know, intelligent discussion with people someday where we can sit down and discuss it, what temperature formaldehyde uncouples proteins and all that kind of stuff. So I can, you know, really break open the Pandora's box of the truth about what's going on with all this stuff.
Yes. Can I invite you back to Evident Footprints in May?
Oh, I would love to. That would be great. Thank you.
All right. We'll get together and schedule that. In the meantime, I want to thank you for your input to the show and all the wonderful information that you brought forth. Hopefully people are paying attention and are going to look into this a little bit more. You know, it's not like these Frankenstein type viruses and bacteria that they're creating are becoming less harmful. They're making them deadlier all the time. And there's more and more information coming out all the time. We have to be informed about these things. There's no doubt about it. And that's a topic for another day. But I want to thank you for being on the show and look forward to your next visit.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right.
So wonderful.
That wraps it up, folks. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And tonight's special guest, Allison Jones. In case you missed the name of her booklet, it's entitled Tracking Vaccinations. It's available at her website, TrackingVaccinations.com. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com for carrying Evident Footprints. Also, I'd like to thank Don Newsom for the sound tonight and Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest on Evident Footprints will be Mr. Ken Adachi. And a second reminder, I will be on Republic Broadcasting Network tomorrow afternoon for 2 hours on the story behind the story with Dr. H. Uat. I look forward to seeing you at both places. And in the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient?